And since you asked, tonight I will be drinking Flor de Cana rum. Caña, perhaps, I don't know. There's a little Spanish lingual mark over the N, so Caña, I would imagine. Aged slowly and lovingly over 7 years. There's a story behind it, which is that I went to the going away slash fundraiser of a man who is going to start a hostel in Nicaragua, and I bought raffle tickets and won the big prize. This came with 2 shot glasses and 2 t-shirts, which I will never wear, but it's excellent. It doesn't have a strong kick to it, but it has a lot of flavor. It tastes like dessert in your mouth. I had last week my first cognac rum. I did not know such a thing existed, and that was literally a dessert. We had that and, you know, some baked goods at my aunt-in-law's house. Fabulous. Put it on the bucket list. Hello, I'm Adam Voley. I'm joined by my good friend Joe Martin, and we're getting reacquainted after 20 years apart.
Good evening, Adam. You know, we spent the entire last time talking about me, so I think this episode I'm looking forward to mostly just sitting back in my chair and listening to you talk about you, because that it seems only fair to give you a chance. Specifically, your lovely wife, Anna, someone that I've known about for many years now. Just met for the first time tonight, and someone that I'm given to understand there's a rather interesting origin story for the two of you, and one I've been looking forward to hearing for a really long time.
Yeah, you have a few cameos in this, actually.
It's what I seem to vaguely remember.
Well, all right. So, yes, I'm married and have been so for over 7 years now. Got married August 1st in 2009. And my wife is Anna Marie, née Bellouri. We met in college.
Now I'm going to stop you here and say we've done a number of intervening episodes, but when we left at the end of the high school episodes, you were, as I remember, somewhere in the backwoods of Colorado going to a rather small but well-appointed public school.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, graduated there, spent a year or two in the wilderness, tried to do some community college classes, but clearly wasn't motivated, wasn't getting good grades. It was best to just drop out and wait until I really wanted to do it. And during that period, I worked at a grocery store, a Taco Bell, most memorably, as a vacuum salesman for 10 months, and we've already discussed that. But when I did decide that university was something I wanted to pursue, and I was free for the first time in my life to choose where I wanted to go to school, I did what you would expect that a guy who had been moving around all his life would do. I decided that I was going to go back to the homeland. So I chose Shorter College in Rome, Georgia, primarily because it was 20 minutes drive from my grandmother's house. In all truth, I'm sure there are much better reasons to attend a university than that, but I'm pretty sure that was the deciding factor, that it was in the area that I had kept coming back to all my life.
You had never actually lived in Georgia, correct? Or at least not after we met, you'd never lived in Georgia's.
No, not after you and I met. The first 6 years of my life, I guess, I lived in Kennesaw. And yeah, so I moved back, I want to say I was 20, 19, around there. So this little town called Rome, Georgia, which was the big town for my grandmother's town of Rockmart because it had a mall. Not a very impressive one. It was one of those little outlet malls that people go jogging inside, but it was the biggest thing around for miles back in the day. And Shorter College is this, or was, a liberal arts college on a hill with a student body that wasn't very large, somewhere just over 1,000, I think. So there was a very small community, and you got to see everybody, even though maybe you didn't know everyone's name. And that's where I met Anna. I think. Because we don't actually recall meeting.
Oh. Is it one of those things where it was in passing at some point and you only gradually got to know each other later, or just total memory loss around the event?
No, it's possible. We just don't know. My first memory of Anna is of my being in the international studies offices and looking up, and Anna walks in and her face lights up and she's asked me how I'm doing. And so I'm worried because I just don't remember her name. It's clear that we've met before, but I don't know who she is. Anna's theory is that she thought I was an interesting looking individual and sat down and said hello one lunch. She says she saw me walking around. I wasn't hard to miss back then. I was bald, wore my grandfather's dog tags, and part of the time I was clad in a bathrobe and pajama bottoms and a shirt, or sweatpants and a shirt, because it was comfortable, and also I thought I was being funny.
It was, as they say, an interesting period in your life.
That's definitely when her little sister remembers meeting me when they toured the campus, because I went over and said hello.
In a bathrobe and pajama bottoms?
Mm-hmm. Now, the first thing that's interesting about how Anna and I met, when you consider how much religion factored in to our courtship, is that I was at a low ebb when I met her. And you know how these things go. Religious fervor tends to rise and fall. And I was at a low point then. So when I met Anna, trumpets didn't blare. There was no Cupid's arrow. I just thought she was hot and wondered if I could get her back to my room. And my pickup was that we should watch Muppet Treasure Island together. And Anna, being a sweet, innocent lamb, said sure. But then had to cancel for this reason or that, which was a great stroke of luck, of course, because if we had gone to my room and I'd tried to make a move on her, and then she said, oh, sorry, I'm a Christian, and you clearly don't do things the way I do them, then I would have been out of the running from there on out, and we wouldn't be married today, probably.
Would have blown your one and only shot to get her attention.
Exactly. So that was serendipitous. Shortly after that, I'd lost my chance altogether because she went to study abroad for a semester in New Zealand. So I moved on with my life, and I told her I would write her emails that if she wanted a pen pal, but even though she included me on her mailing list, I never did. So I wasn't doing that well in the beginning, clearly.
This was a relationship that was obviously blessed from the start.
Mm-hmm, right.
So was all of this, because we talked about my relationship, or at least the journey on the relationship started freshman year. Was this also freshman year for you, or was this a little bit later into your experience at Shorter?
It would have been first semester of sophomore year.
Okay.
And since I had just kind of bumped around for a little while after high school, even though I'm older than Anna, we were in the same year of university. So that too worked out. By the time she made her way back round to Shorter in the fall of our junior year, I was back on the Christian High. And then things enter more conventional territory. I was totally smitten and quickly developed a crush. But then things got tricky. You are aware, I'm sure we've talked about this, but you're aware of Josh Harris and the whole...
Yes.
Right, the whole courtship subculture of Christianity. American evangelicism. So the idea, for those of you who are blessedly unaware, is that... And it holds water, I guess, still, if you think about it, that, you know, if God has a plan for your life, and that obviously includes a husband or a wife, presumably, then that person is out there, and you shouldn't do anything with other people of the opposite sex that you wouldn't do if you were already married. There's a bit of modern awareness of the space-time continuum, I think, involved in this philosophy. The idea that, you know, your future husband is out there.
In some sense, you are already married cosmically. You just haven't yet met the other person.
Exactly. Time is actually flat, or what have you. And God sees all at once, so on and so forth. So Anna had already decided to do that before she went to college and wasn't at all looking for a relationship. In fact, she'd never been in one. She'd accidentally gone on one or two dates. But those are her stories. I'd encountered the idea during my sophomore year with my friends, and we had just gotten into it. And to be perfectly honest, I can't quite recall if I committed to that before or shortly after I met Anna. It's possibly that it's entirely possible that I went for it because I knew that that was how she felt. So I spent a month stewing about it and praying on it, of course. And then I summoned up the courage to get her alone in the parking lot behind one of the buildings at the time. And since we were both adherents of this philosophy about dating, which we called courtship, of course, to distinguish it, instead of saying, well, hey, how about we hang out sometime? And just being kind of ambiguous about it, like I think a lot of people do, and just pick up some hints or signals, and then fall into each other's arms, I just said to her that it was possible that our adventures in life might be one and the same, or might be interconnected. And would she be interested in finding out? So Anna said, being the wise woman she is, well, how long did you think and pray about this? Yeah, you know where this is going. And I said to her, a month, which was true, but also playing right into her hands. I thought that showed how careful I was being. So she said, okay, well, well, give me the same amount of time to think about it.
I remember getting texts, or, well, we weren't doing texts at the time. I remember talking to you on the AOL Instant Messenger about this, now that you mention it, finding out about the month-long waiting period that you suddenly, surprisingly, found yourself confronted with. Possibly even shock that this had happened and that you were being put on a probationary one-month waiting period.
It was harsh, man. In particular for me, I think a less obsessive person could have borne up under it much better. But even now, I'm the sort of person who has a lot of difficulty just letting things go and be and figuring that whatever will come will come. And I'm much more mature about it than I used to be. I was not even in the best place in college. I was chronically sleep deprived. I had a lot going on. And so waiting out this month was really a kind of test. Will I crack? No. So to give you an idea of how difficult this was for me, I either marked off the days on my calendar, or maybe I went and bought a calendar expressly for the purpose. But on this calendar, I didn't just have the days until Anna was going to tell me whether we were going to try a relationship. I also had written down on what days I was allowed to initiate contact with her, because I was worried that I was going to keep obsessing over this and smother her in the meanwhile. So I didn't want to pressure her or just be seen constantly lurking around, or at any rate, I was concerned about that. So I gave myself every other day or every third day, I can't remember now, when I was allowed to pick up the phone and call and see how she was doing, or go over to her dorm and say what's up, etc., etc. As it turned out, it wasn't much of an issue. We kept running into each other. Again, it's a small campus. And to my delight, we would hang out quite a bit. In part, I'm sure, because she was trying to get a reading on me. And I'm sure during this time that all of my friends got panicked texts or emails or whatnot. Because I was melting down. This is not the sort of thing that I have dealt with in the past very well. It was good exercise for me, I guess.
Now I'm wishing I had all of those old AOL chat logs still saved, because I'm sure there were multiple conversations that we had during this period.
No doubt. During this time, I did my best to keep my mind off her and completely failed, of course. And as far as I could tell, she was pretty cool about it. And the deal was, she really wasn't overly concerned, because the truth of the matter was, she was not romantically interested in me at the time. She didn't think I was ugly or anything, I don't reckon. But she had not been considering a relationship at all. And as it turned out, that kind of worked in my favor. Her eventual logic was that since she knew me and she respected me as a man of God and trusted that I believed what I said, that there was really no harm in it, and it would be a good opportunity to try a relationship out and, you know, enter this new phase of life.
A practice courtship, if you will.
Yeah, and in retrospect, maybe that sounds bad, but I don't think so, and how can it be? She gave me a shot. Isn't that what so many of us say we want, especially when we take a shot out of our league? Just give me a chance.
I think we all want way more than a shot, but a shot is what we publicly say we want.
Well, it's what we feel we can ask for.
True. The art of the deal, as it were.
Right.
And I should point out for our listeners who aren't familiar with courtship that it really is different than dating. It's not just different in name only, but the idea really is supposed to be that you see each other in social settings only, surrounded by your friends and family, that you only ever do things as part of groups, and that it really is a relationship aimed at marriage as its eventual end, that either through social situations you determine that you are in fact right for each other and that you should get married, or that you're not and you break it off. But it is intended to be very different from dating, with dating's emphasis on a one-on-one relationship and lots of one-on-one time. And I get the feeling that with Anna, this may have played into her feelings as well, that it was qualitatively different than agreeing to date you.
Yeah, it's definitely a lower risk operation, and you have it exactly right. If you're a Jane Austen fan, you kind of get the idea of courtship, because that's, you know, you have a gentleman caller, and there's this understanding that he's interested, but there's not really any pressure on you, at least not in the modern day and age, because your mother doesn't want you to get married at 16. And yes, our first date, I would say, if I had to mark our first date, I would say it was an outing to the Atlanta Zoo with her younger brother Rob and her little sister Grace. So that would have been our first date. We weren't as strict as the most severe form of courtship, for the record. It's true that we didn't hold hands, much less kiss, but we were willing to be alone together. And we trusted ourselves that much, and so did our parents in general. So we began this process, and through December and January, we went out occasionally, and had a good time, did Bible studies, of course.
Of course.
Because that's what you do. And I suppose I should mention, since I haven't already, some of what attracted me to her. For starters, of course, as you are well aware, she's lovely.
I will admit to her being the second loveliest woman in the world.
Joe and I both have radio faces, but Anna was, could have been on television as far as I'm concerned. In fact, I guess she was. She came close to a brush with fame. She was in line to be one of Mel Gibson's children in The Patriot. She made the final running. That's like a childhood thing, but I find that amusing.
That is fascinating.
So she took a shot at the childhood actor thing, and she was in the theater program. She knew she didn't want to pursue a career in it, but it was her passion, and ultimately a degree is not necessarily indicative of what you will do with it after you graduate college anyway, at least not if you're a humanities major of some sort. And she was very much at peace with that and saying as much when I first met her. when...
I think I want to stop you and back up here at a moment.
Okay.
And ask a similar question to one you'd asked of me. Namely, because you mentioned going to the Atlanta Zoo with her and her family. So which point during all of this had you two met each other's families? Was it known right away once the 30 days were up that you were courting her, or was that something that was made public a little later on? And then I guess as well tied into that, I know from what I remember, your friends were quite involved in this relationship in various ways at Shorter. So how much were your friends in on your plans or your intentions?
Well, before I answer that, let me finish real quick, because I'd hate for the only thing I said about her to be that she was pretty.
Go for it.
Yeah. You know, there is a real advantage to marrying within your subculture, which is to say that we had a lot of the same touchstones. And that was actually unusual for me as a homeschooled kid. You know, after leaving the whole homeschooled life at 13 or 14, I didn't really know anyone else like that. And it's funny how you meet someone who is also homeschooled, you know, half a decade after you're finished with that whole thing, and you find that you two have so much in common, that it's such a similar, especially since we were both from Georgia. For example, as we discussed in our homeschooling episode, how we learned the 50 states and their capitals from Animaniacs, or what it was like to go on field trips in the middle of the day instead of classes, just because your parents thought it was a good idea. Obviously, she was she wasn't as smart. In fact, she was is this the right term? The class valedictorian. She had the highest GPA. She shared that honor with someone else when she graduated. Anyway, the whole summa cum laude thing.
Right.
Totally could have had a pick of master's programs afterward. And we amused each other. And we still do, of course. I don't know how many other people find us funny, but we can always crack each other up. So there was everything to love about her and pretty much nothing to dislike. Actually, okay, I take that back. We both wished the other person had been from another country so that we could have finally gotten dual citizenship somewhere. We were both disappointed that we ended up marrying someone from home.
Although that in itself is the sign of a well-matched couple. You were both hoping for exactly the same thing in a partner. You just both failed to get it.
Yeah, hadn't really considered how that might play out if you're looking for someone like you.
I'm looking for someone homeschooled who's familiar with Georgia, but also a citizen of another nation.
Mm-hmm. Well, better luck next life on that one. But on the whole, I think, I know I did very well for myself. Now, as far as the question of have we met each other's families and whatnot, I had met her mother and little sister in passing, but it scarcely needs to be mentioned because, again, it was just in passing. Although, now that you mention it, Anna does recall that after I falsely promised to write her while she was in New Zealand, her mother said to her, that I was nice and that she should indeed write me. Farther on, it's funny, most of our parents were not actually, I won't say they weren't supportive of this whole courtship framework, but they weren't believers in it themselves. Anna and her mother had agreed that it was the right thing to do as she was growing up, And since we practiced a less restrictive version of that, then Anna and her mother had talked about that led to a little bit of, not conflict, maybe tension, but overall, my parents' attitude was that we're not quite sure what you're doing, but go you. I mean, I know my dad was happy to that I was putting God first and all the rest, but when my father was searching for a second wife, he flat out dated and held hands and kissed, I believe, before the wedding day. So, way to be a role model there, Dad. As far as friends, of course, we both had our confidants, people who were in our lives, like you, for example. But not necessarily many other people who were practicing this. Anna more than me. Anna had several friends at Pensacola Christian, the publishers of Abeka.
Yes.
So I think in part she learned about the whole courtship idea from them, but or at least she was encouraged in it. As for me, my friend Sam Rinnick, maybe someone else, were passing around copies of the Harris book, and that was how we twigged onto it. Did I answer your question? That one was a little roundabout.
Yeah, I think so. And I think I was asking not just so much about friends in on the courtship idea, but just friends, I think specifically your friends who were aware of your interest in Anna and whether you had any conspirators, co-conspirators, towards making you look good or helping to arrange things.
All right. Well, you know, my friend, you asked the right question there, because I had several very loyal friends in this regard. Shout out to Sam Rinnick, Frank Silva, and Yannick Basabaquenchi, without whom who knows where I would be today. But I, as we've discussed, I learned all about romance essentially from stories, books, and movies, which was not the healthiest source of information. But by God, if there is one area, or if there is one lesson that a writer learns from stories about how to romance a woman, it's go big or go home. So over the next 2 months after she said that she was willing to be courted by me, I proceeded to wage warfare on that woman's heart. I set myself a schedule again. Obviously, I was very methodical about this, that every time we went out, which was once a week or once every 2 weeks, depending on what else was going on in a particular month, that every date had to have a standout moment. Some sort of trick, some sort of beautiful scenery, something magical, something that a director would want to put in his romantic comedy. And I managed to keep to this schedule for a good solid semester's worth of time, I think, right through junior year. There was the time that I, since she lived on the first floor of a dormitory building, corralled several football players, found myself some bungee cord, went to the apartment above hers and asked the resident if she would mind if these players hung me outside her window. So I dressed up. I got myself some roses. And incidentally, Anna was not a flower girl, or thought she was not, but she actually came to appreciate them. And then I had the football players lower me upside down to dangle outside of Anna's window. And then I knocked on the glass and she answered and her eyes bugged out. So that's one example. Oh, and by the way, massive props to a woman whose name I no longer remember, but that same resident in that apartment took the opportunity to check the knot that the football players had tied around their waists and and declared it alarmingly suboptimal. So that's
when this whole story may have ended right then and there, had she not.
My story may have ended. Another time, after Anna informed me that she always felt sick in her stomach after going to Waffle House, which was another hurdle in the relationship, but we got over it. I told her one night to get in her fanciest clothes, and I'd get in mine, and we were going out for a night out of the town. And then I took her to the local Waffle House. She, of course, was kind about it, you know, ha ha ha, but it's not really that funny, let's face it. And all you've done is place a woman in a position where now she's eating at a restaurant she doesn't, or she likes, but which causes her problems. After we took our seat, however, Frank and Sam, my co-conspirators, arrived in their own best and proceeded to place a cloth over our table and to set down Anna's favorite meal, along with some glassware and silverware and whatnot. And then we had a very nice meal in the Waffle House.
Very nice.
Yeah, and the waitresses were behind us because I promised to tip the heck out of them.
Let us bring our own food in, and I'll make it worth your while.
Exactly. So every weekend was something like that. You know, I'd always felt like one of the best things about myself was my imagination, and so I was going to put it to work for me. Some of these ideas were not necessarily good ones. I dressed all in black, hid the car, and took urban exploring adventure in an abandoned rock mine. Not the mine itself, not... Well, yeah, okay, it is a mine, but there's not a tunnel. There's a big pit. And there is a very large construct straight out of an Ayn Rand fever dream, you know, made of concrete and metal, all of which is now rusting or crumbling. And we ducked around in there and both avoided security and climbed the tower and startled an owl in its nest. It was cool. Went cliff diving, on and on and on. And if I sound like I'm proud of it, I guess I am.
Well, anybody that puts that much work into planning dates, I think, deserves to take a little bit of a victory lap.
Yeah.
Sorry, courtship opportunities.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We didn't call them dates, or maybe we slipped into it, I don't know. But yeah, it was a lot of work. And that wasn't what eventually got Anna's interest, of course, but it kept her entertained in the meanwhile.
It kept your foot in the door just long enough for other things to work.
That was the strategy. I figured as long as she was having fun, that I would have another chance.
You know, it strikes me, it's almost a storytelling trope of the individual who only knows about life through books and proceeds to act out life as though living through a book or a story. And at least as far as dating relationship goes, I mean, you pretty much lived that out in terms of the relationship is the big play, and in a movie it happens once or twice, in a story maybe a few more times. And you tried to actually keep it going for a semester or more.
Yeah, and I did. And there's positives and negatives to that. As, again, Anna and I were a lot alike, and I think that desire to turn life into a movie was partly born of this idea that that's how you should try to make life, that life could be an adventure if you made it one, you know?
Yeah.
The negative side of that is that it's a lot of pressure to put yourself under. And it's okay and even healthy to live a more low-key existence too. And there was a point afterwards when I had begun to run out of ideas, or else I was distracted with my first job out of college or what have you, that Anna kind of had to talk me down and said, hey, listen, we're together. You have me. Just, you know, don't worry about constantly impressing me now. And I had to give myself permission to dial it back. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. You get into locked into a certain mode, almost perhaps a manic state where you feel like it's something you have to continue doing or it all falls apart.
Right. And to be honest, I think both of us to some degree, definitely me in any way, I won't speak for you, but I've long had self-esteem issues, sounds wrong, but there was always this doubt in my mind, and maybe this is just peculiar to love in general, that Anna could really want me, you know? But she did, and one of the great joys of being married to her is that I know that, and I'm confident in her love.
It's a great thing about marriage is solidifies that feeling of, well, it actually happened. It actually went all the way through the ceremony and never fell apart. And then you start feeling actually good and somewhat confident.
Yeah. It can breed a certain complacency if you let it, of course. The world's full of stories about husbands and wives who stopped trying, and that hurt the marriage. But
I believe you forced me into reading one once, but that's a discussion for another time.
I didn't force you, man. You...
No, that's true. I walked straight into that one. Anyhow, so time check. Where are we on the timeline of the relationship? Are we still in shorter, or are we moving post-shorter at this point?
Well, to make a long story short, Anna first felt butterflies in her stomach on Valentine's Day, a few months into our courtship. I picked her up. I was wearing a suit with a pink shirt and a red tie.
Oh, nice.
And I took her to the circus. And I noticed encouraging signs, but of course it was a while before I dared believe it. We proceeded to date, quote-unquote, through our senior year. I gave up on the idea I'd been batting around to study abroad for a semester because I wanted to pursue the relationship. I made that conscious decision, which my friends, previously mentioned co-conspirators Frank and Sam, found amusing because I had already convinced them to go abroad. So I sent Frank to New Zealand and I sent Sam to Austria. And I stayed at home.
Very nice.
Well, they should thank me. Everyone needs to get out. And halfway through our senior year, I already knew, of course, that I wanted to spend my life with this woman. And so I prepared another flamboyant date, but the end of this one, of course, would have me proposing marriage. My mother armed me with her own engagement ring. Wing?
Marriage is what we are here to discuss today. I took her to her favorite place in the world, the Frog Pond at Callaway Gardens, which is near the Franklin Delano Roosevelt National Park. There's a gazebo there. I lured her down by arranging a scavenger hunt in which each location possessed a CD on which I had recorded a message for her about our relationship. There was a moon in the sky. I was on one knee. I said, I've been thinking about this for a long time. She said, how long? I hadn't learned a thing. I said, since we'd been courting, which was the truth. That had been about a year and a half, so she said, all right. I want the same amount of time to think about it.
Walked right into that one.
Oh, I really do deserve everything I get. Although if that's true, actually, then I must be a pretty great guy, because my life's pretty good.
Somewhere in your youth or childhood, you must have done something good.
Right. Or in an earlier life or something. So, well, we know that's... I don't believe that, considering the last episode, or two episodes ago. Anyway, Anna's response was not unstrategic. She had decided already that she wanted to study French. So she was going to be an au pair in Switzerland for a year after graduating. And she wasn't going to let me get in the way of that. So I said, bon voyage, and realized I had a little bit of time to kill before I was going to get married. And that was when I decided to go teach English in South Korea for the first time. So we engaged in a long-distance courtship for the following year after we graduated. I used my newfound fortune, because that's how it feels the first time you have a real job, like you're just drowning in cash.
Money on a regular basis. It just keeps coming.
It's incredible. I used most of it. Well, that's not true. I saved up a little egg for when we did get married, but I used a fair amount of money to visit her three times in Europe. Once in Switzerland itself, a second time in Rome, Italy, where we met, and the third time I went to Venice, where I rendezvoused with her and, once more, her little brother and sister.
Ah, Venice.
It was cool, man. Actually, it was freezing. Let me rephrase that. We went in February, and Venice is, as you might expect of a city that is on the water, is just brutally cold. A word about long-distance relationships, too. Long-distance relationships are like foreign countries. If you're going to get into them, you should have an exit plan. Which is to say that I knew that there was always this understanding in our minds that after the year was over that we would return and meet up again. And I think they're much easier to bear when you have that light at the end of the tunnel in sight. I can't imagine how people actually pursue long-distance relationships when they aren't particularly sure about this person.
Seems like that would just be an invitation to have the relationship slowly end and die away, because if you're not sure and you're not in close proximity, it's really hard to keep it going.
Absolutely. One good piece of advice from those Christian relationship books, which I still believe, is that a relationship is constantly developing. So you should always be aware of what it's developing into. Anyhow, the second time that we met while she was living in Switzerland learning to speak French, and I was living in South Korea trying to teach the kids how to speak English. When we met in Rome, Italy, that's when she gave me a fantastic surprise. We stopped first at the Trevi Fountain, which, as some of you may know, is the big fountain in Rome where you toss in a coin and make a wish. And often these wishes are about romance. And then we went to a piazza, which we no longer can locate, actually. We tried to find it last year and couldn't. And Anna told me for the first time that she wanted to marry me. Unfortunately, her parents had asked her how long she was thinking about it. And they said they needed some time. So, a short summary, I guess, of this whole journey would be that there were three proposals. And over a course of 3 years, I knew that I wanted to marry her after 1 year. She knew she wanted to marry me after 2 years. And our parents knew they weren't going to be able to stop us after 3 years. So we met up again in Georgia after the years were over. I proposed to her on Valentine's Day once more in 2009 and rearranged for a fairly quick wedding. We were engaged February 14th and we got married on August 1st.
That is fast. You had a real Jacob and Rachel thing going on there. Only you were lucky enough to go for the older sister.
You know, you joke, but as a Christian, that story came into my head plenty of times as a reason why I shouldn't complain. Jacob had to wait 14 years for the woman he wanted. I'm only having to wait X amount of time. And when you think in those terms, it's far more reasonable.
Especially considering he got the bitter older sister in the bargain.
Yeah. Grace is a great girl, but I'm pretty sure that that's not anything we would... Anyhow. Yeah, so we got married. We had an awesome wedding. It was outdoors. It was a guerrilla wedding, which is to say that there was a beautiful park with a small lake owned by an office building near the church where we were getting married. And my father-in-law asked a man he knew who worked there if we could use it for the wedding. And his friend told him, just do it. So on a mercifully clear day, we just ran out there, got married. No one was the wiser.
Nice.
Yeah, the only things that went wrong were that my father-in-law, my brother, and my brother-in-law, bless them all, had to clear a forest path for Anna to walk down, and a tree had fallen across it. So they got out a chainsaw, and in cutting the, as soon as they fired up that thing, apparently they disturbed a hornet's nest.
Oh.
So they flung down that tool and had to run for it. Also, it so happened that our wedding day was also my father-in-law's birthday, and we really meant to sing happy birthday to him at the wedding, and in all the hubbub, we clean forgot. We still kick ourselves for that. Every time we talk about our wedding, we says we wouldn't change a thing, except we wish we'd wished Dad a happy birthday. We didn't use family much for staffing purposes. They helped take out chairs and everything, and they were kind enough to pay for the wedding. which we were determined to make sure was very cheap. As strong Christians, we felt that we should not overly spend on it, and also we just felt guilty about the idea of fobbing off a big bill on our parents. So I think we got everything done for under $4,000.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. Props to everybody involved for that. I know Anna's aunt found the church. It was her church at the time, and so on and so forth. It really came together. And Anna's friend made her dress for her. All told, it just went really well. My father-in-law and my grandmother-in-law and maybe my brother-in-law too were involved in the ceremony itself. We didn't have an actual ordained pastor, unless you count Andrew, who sent away for a certificate, which was fine with us, because unbeknownst to all of our family members, we no longer believed in God. Or we were pretty sure we didn't. I can't quite recall. We had a breakfast buffet because it was in the morning. How awesome is that?
That is awesome.
Yeah, sausage, gravy, southern biscuits, nice and fluffy.
There's nothing like a good southern breakfast.
No, not at all. That is one of the great benefits of being back in the homeland after all these years. People said really nice things about us. We danced. In fact, we prepared a special dance in advance. We went to dance studio, and we learned a swing dance routine. So midway through our first dance as a couple, we broke out into this big number. It was marvelous. I regret nothing. I don't even regret that I didn't enjoy it more than I did, because of course I was stressed out of my gourd, you know me.
Oh yes.
Not as stressed as my mother. She tells me that after the wedding was over, that she actually drove the wrong way down a highway off-ramp.
Wow.
Realized what she was doing and backed up before things got messy. Although I can just about match her. Anna and I drove away and went to a hotel in Atlanta in advance of our flight to the Caribbean for our honeymoon, got to her hotel room, and promptly fell asleep. That was a really tiring day.
Well, when you start everything with a breakfast buffet and an early morning wedding, and then you go all day, it's no surprising. I mean, I can say our wedding was, if not the most stressful day of my life, certainly in the top five. So by the end of it, you're lucky if you've got any energy left whatsoever.
You said it, man. Ain't it the truth? It takes it out of you. So that was the beginning. That's how we got hitched. And about 6 months after that, we moved to South Korea. And that, of course, is where I learned what kind of woman I had hitched my wagon to. And I mean that in the most positive way possible, because they continuously warned us, either informally or during premarital counseling, which my father was kind enough to pay for, that there would be this dark age. We heard this term more than once, dark age, after we got married, when we were disabused of all our romantic notions, when we realized that marriage is work. And
marriage is hell, as Dan Carlin might say.
I need to listen to that guy more often. I'd say that we should mention where you can hear Dan Carlin, but he doesn't need our help. Anyway, there was this big expectation, which we had prepared ourselves for, that we were going to enter a readjustment phase. And in fact, this didn't happen, not between us, but maybe just because we were so worried about it, but we did go through the difficult early years. I moved Anna back to South Korea. The original intent was not to save up money for the business that we're opening this year. The original intent was just to build a nice, solid buffer fund with which we could proceed to whatever course we chose. We still had not decided what that would be. But having been to South Korea, I knew that it paid well, and Anna, with a certification, could also make money doing it. And so we were filling out the forms for... No, correction. We were just accepted into the government program that we would later enter into, when an old friend from my first year in South Korea contacted me. It was a pastor at the Christian school that I had taught at, and he informed us that he was opening his own school. And just out of curiosity, Joe, have I told you this story? Do you remember any of this?
This all sounds very vaguely familiar, which could mean you've told it to me in depth and my memory has just completely failed to hold on to it, or could mean I just heard the barest of outlines. So let's go fully into it.
Okay. So this pastor friend of mine and I had grown close. He was my father while I was in South Korea. And we trusted each other quite a bit. In fact, when his daughter was passing through Atlanta on her way to California, she stayed over at my apartment. So he said he was starting a school and to go with him instead, and he would pay us more. And, of course, we already had a working relationship. And I said, sure, that sounds great. And consequently, I ignored a lot of red flags. He was okay with the fact that we weren't Christian. This wasn't really a red flag, but I told him flat out, listen, I know you're setting up a Christian school for your students, and we don't believe anymore. He said, keep it to yourself, it won't be a big deal, I trust you. I said, great. But when we went to the local embassy and picked up our visas, they weren't in proper order. I had a visa to teach English, but my wife only had a spousal visa, which meant, of course, that she wasn't supposed to be working. I call him up. He says, don't worry about it. We'll fix it after you get here. I say, okay. We fly to South Korea and are taken by his wife into the mountains southeast of the capital, Seoul. And that's when we learn that he's left the school. We would later find out that actually he'd been embezzling money and that he essentially needed to make a run for it. But we didn't.
Wow.
Yeah, but we didn't know that then. All we knew was that there had been a breakup between my pastor, who was supposed to be the school's principal, and the owners of the school who were funding the venture. This meant, of course, that there was already less trust than there should have been. There was a second interview process when we got there. Anna and I both kind of looked at each other. Why are we interviewing for this job that we came across the Pacific Ocean to take? But the school semester was just starting, and the owners didn't really have any other choice. Sure, the criminal they hired had chosen these two employees, but they didn't have anyone else. So the school semester began. A new principal was hired, a college professor, and we were presented with 7 students. Now, picture this, because the nearest comparison I can make is to the classic schoolhouse in Hillbilly Appalachia. There's a structure some distance from a church in the mountains, and there are two or maybe three classrooms and a chapel, I think.
So I've got, you are in slacks and a button-down pinstripe with suspenders. The kids are all showing up with farm overalls. You've got your hair slicked back with some Brill Cream.
Pomade.
Pomade, exactly.
Yeah,
and the kids are rumbling and rough and ready. Kind of surly and not wanting to be there.
Right. Not entirely true. I don't think I was using hair product then, and Korean kids are all far more stylish than any American kid today. But all of the seven of these children were different ages and possessed different levels of English-speaking ability. Some barely knew anything, and some were basically conversational, close enough, if they tried. One had learning problems, we're pretty sure. He might have been ADD or something of the nature, but he definitely had a disability. And between the two of us, we had to teach these kids, who were technically classified as homeschoolers by the government, everything they needed to know for the year. They were learning out of Bob Jones University textbooks, which made no effort, of course, to accommodate their frame of reference, and in fact were occasionally embarrassing in that they had the unflagging patriotic tone that you would expect of them. There was a whole lot of the USA is number one type stuff in there.
USA, USA. Korea should be so grateful we were there to be their friends.
Pretty much. Not to mention disinformation such as lessons on why dinosaurs and mankind once existed contemporaneously. And arguments for that. Just stuff which, in retrospect, I'm sorry they were learning. Anyhow.
Now, were you just teaching English language, or were you teaching multiple subjects here?
We were teaching everything.
Yes,
we taught math, science, English, Bible, and the owners, I think, were sane enough to teach the children Korean history themselves, or I don't know where they got that, but I'm pretty sure we weren't teaching them actual history.
So you were not just on the school staff, you almost essentially were the school staff.
Oh, we were. Besides us, there was the principal in his office, and there was a secretary, who was the daughter of the owners. In fact, not only was she the daughter of one of the owners, or the investors, rather, but three or four of the other children were also children of the owners.
It's a homeschool in more ways than one.
Very much so. After the first principal left, the owners didn't know what to do, really. Or they hadn't succeeded in their efforts. I don't know. Anyway, the result was that there were barely any children in there who were actually earning money for the school. So its days were undoubtedly numbered in the first place. Now, I said that this is where I learned what Anna was made of. We had to study in advance of the next day's lessons every night, because we, of course, had no idea, hadn't had it done 6th grade and 10th grade math in forever, and I didn't have really a book to use, and we had to figure out how we were going to communicate these different subjects to all these children of varying levels, which turned out, in a sense, to be easier than we expected, because one of the weird things about Abeka and Bob Jones University books is that they tend to reuse the same material a lot. I don't know if you remember this. You know, in part, it was sort of a review, but you may be surprised to learn that I was, that in university, at least at Pensacola Christian University, they actually reuse that material again. Like their high school textbooks.
I did not realize that.
Yeah, I don't know if that's still true, but the point is that a lot of this material, at least that wasn't math related, was the same.
So you were fairly inexperienced as a teacher at this point, correct? This was your second, third year of teaching?
Yeah, it was Anna's first year and my second. And we had to dig deep for resources. And this is where this will always be a moment I remember with great pride. One day, I walked out of the building just to take some air and watch Anna teaching the kids their science lesson for the day. And that morning, she had gone to the fish market, you know, the traditional fish market, where everyone's hawking big fish and octopus and everything else in the stands, and she had bought several fish. And right there with her students, she had lain down newspaper, and she was opening up that fish so that everyone could learn the English names of its innards. So she went ahead and bought critters and did the biology herself. One more reason among many that I loved her. We were getting paid really well, was the nice thing about it, but the whole deal was highly dysfunctional. The college professor, in a great departure from the standard, or rather stereotypical, Korean male, mainly just walked around the building complaining that he really didn't know what he was doing, and he wasn't sure why he got involved. And one morning, I went to his office to greet him, knocked, and didn't hear any answer, and peeked inside, and he wasn't there anymore. Instead, there was just a rabbit in his desk. And now I know what you're thinking. And no, the professor had not been turned into the rabbit.
It would fit with the overall tenor of the story.
It really would at this point. What had actually occurred was that the students had found the rabbits or bought them and had constructed a fence behind the school, and so they had created their rabbit cage, and they had stored the rabbit in there while they were working on it. But we never actually, I suppose the jury's still out, because we never actually did find out what happened to that principal. His wife called. She didn't know where he was.
So he'd really just up and disappeared.
He completely vanished. So that was the second principal to take off. Or be kidnapped, we weren't sure. But Anna and I would end up pulling a vanishing act of our own after the first semester, because shortly into it, we realized the disconcerting truth that we were illegal immigrants entirely. I was incapable of reading Korean when we arrived, but my visa had a completely different address on it from the school that I was purportedly working at. They had completely faked my paperwork.
Oh.
In theory, I was teaching at a school across the country. And, I mean, but I guess one of the benefits was that my earnings weren't being taxed at all.
That would explain why the pay was so good.
Yeah, but bank privacy wasn't exactly, and still isn't, a big thing in South Korea. So I'm not going to say it was a matter of time before I was caught, but there was certainly nothing to keep me from being arrested, charged $5,000, I guess, and then sent home.
Unceremoniously dumped on a plane back to the States.
Exactly. And
so I had just been about to ask, was Anna technically at this point illegally working? But it turns out you were as well.
Yeah, we both were. In fact, the school wasn't even supposed to be there. It was zoned as a restaurant. There was nothing on the up and up about this facility. And I made a choice. Perhaps it was unwise in retrospect, but, you know, an adventure is a disaster that you walk away from. I could have turned around immediately, and Anna and I could have just gotten on a plane and gone back to America. But if we had bought tickets at that time, that would have wiped us out. That was all the money we had. And I just had a little too much pride to have gotten married a few months ago and then to come back to our parents in Georgia and say, well, that was fun. I need a place to live.
Turns out I got suckered by a couple of Korean confidence men stuck teaching a backwoods school to the founder's children and on an illegal visa.
Yeah, I did share that story with them after we left, but we decided to stick it out for the semester. Also, we told ourselves that we were doing it in part for the children. You know, they were stuck in this school for a semester, like it or not. Although I suppose if the whole thing had fallen apart, they would have just been put back in the public education system, and maybe that would have been for the best. But after the semester had finished and summer break had officially begun, we figured that the owners had enough time to figure out another plan before the fall. And so I was very careful about this. And by the way, there's a term for this. Among expat native speaking English teachers, it's doing the midnight run. When your work circumstances are awful, and the best thing you can do is quietly disappear like a ghost. It kind of sucks for the owners or the whoever your employer is, because all of a sudden they have an apartment that they've rented out and they don't have another teacher to teach their children and so on and so forth. And there are teachers who abuse that and they should be ashamed of themselves. But there is a disturbing amount of advantage taken of English teachers in South Korea. It really depends on how you land there, whether you have a good experience or not. In fact, there's a warning on the State Department website that you're taking your future into your hands a little bit if you do it and accept a job there. Because Korean owners are the holders of your visa, which means you can't quit a job and find another one. You know, you're attached to that one workplace.
So very much like the U.S. H-1B visa.
Yes, exactly. And every time I hear about that now, you know what gives you a lot of empathy for illegal immigrants in the United States of America? Being one somewhere else. So, yeah, we pulled a midnight run. I packed up Anna. We sent her off to another job in New Orleans. She got a start on that early. And so she took the flight, and I waited until she was gone, until our last paychecks for the month were both in our bank accounts. And then I sent that money home, bought a ticket, and then the morning of the flight, I had breakfast with the owners and explained to them that while I appreciated that they had been put in a bad situation themselves and that they could try to throw me in jail if they like, they were going to have to catch me before I got to the airport. And as it turned out, that worked out as well as it possibly could have. The owners were genuinely good people who didn't understand what my ex-friend was doing and bore us no ill will. When we came back to South Korea and did things right, my third trip and a second, We accepted jobs with the government, but we also attended the secretary's wedding.
Very nice.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, actually. It would have been very easy for them to just write us off entirely as bad memories, even if they didn't blame us. But instead, they extended that olive leaf. So that was our early experience as a married couple, being illegal immigrants in South Korea. And the real benefit of that, after we stayed in a little grungy one-room apartment where, holy cow, that was the worst apartment ever. The shower tile, we only realized 2 weeks in that it wasn't supposed to be pink. That was all fungus.
Ooh.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't just the work that was bad. We were put in ugly living conditions. Anyhow.
So exactly like illegal immigrants to the U.S.
Really? No, I won't compare myself to them. I'm sure they have it harder, but it was pretty rough. And yet, you know, nowadays I smile about it. So let's cut it off there. Let's just say that that's the story of how Adam and Anna got married and started things off.
And survived.
Man, well, I haven't told that story in a while. Other questions, Joe? Are we nearing the tail end here?
I think we're nearing the tail end. The only thing I was going to ask, because we talked about it at the end of the conversation about Christine and I, you and Anna don't have children. What are your respective thoughts? I mean, are children something you see as in your future? Or are you both happy not having children?
Anna says she's never felt the urge to have children of her own. She's fantastic with children. She babysat when she was younger and then began doing it for more high-dollar clients, and then she was an au pair in Switzerland, so she did it for a year professionally. And she's just a wonder at it, but she says she's never actually had a desire for it herself, and in part she blames her great experience in child rearing on that. I like the idea of it. I think I haven't asked for children because I'm concerned that I'm more worried about missing out on having children than I am excited about the idea of having them.
Yes.
The idea of being 60 and not having any disturbs me a bit. Until I feel that I can identify feelings in me that I can describe as actually wanting children, I guess we're not going to have any. For the record, Anne and I did discuss it. It amazes me how many people get married without discussing it, but the agreement is, quite simply, that if one of us wants children, the other one's in. Which I think is really the only right answer, because if you want that, if somebody wants something that important and that integral to life, or not integral rather, but such an important element of one's life, then I can't imagine wanting to keep that from them. Know what I mean?
Right. If you truly love and are committed to the other person, how could you possibly turn down a request that is that important to them?
Exactly. On the other hand, there's no reason she couldn't let me go and find someone else if she really didn't want to have children, but I'm very confident in saying that Anna would simply agree and that we would have them. Right now, it's kind of a moot point because we are about to spend our life savings on starting a business, which we'll talk about more in our careers episode. I think that's up next, right?
I think that is up next.
Right. So at present, it would be a problem. If we do succeed in this business and we're set up, then I'll revisit the question. I'm going to have to, because we're getting older. I'm 33, Anna's 31 now. So, you know, the time's ticking.
And this is why I was really curious to ask the question, because I feel like the things you guys have gone through over the last couple of years, as we'll talk about in the careers episode, is almost running full speed towards a very specific goal, such that it wouldn't have, I think it wouldn't have made sense for you to have kids prior to this point, and not even at this point. And so it doesn't surprise me, given that you don't have children yet. But that's why I was curious to find out, is it something that you potentially see in your future, or just not part of the viewpoint at all? Just because I could very easily see the kind of career you guys want, kids just never fitting into the picture.
Yeah, we'd have to make space for it. the industry in which we're interested in working is... would require a little bit of thought to fit a kid in there. And you're quite right. We are people who make plans, and there was no way that children were going to comfortably fit in the plan before now. If nothing else, having a child is a trying experience enough without doing it in a foreign country.
Right, and trying to take care of an infant while trying to teach someone else's kids when those other kids are from a foreign culture and speak a foreign language, I cannot imagine how stressful that would be.
Mm. Well, at least on the plus side, actually, our discomfort aside, if we do have children, we'll probably be wishing that we had them in South Korea, because that country has... fairly good maternity leave laws, and we would have gotten time off for it. Anyhow, yeah, so that's that. Yeah, appreciate the question.
I think that covers everything I really wanted to ask, and you two have certainly had a unique journey together, one filled with more adventures. Like you say, any disaster that you walk away from, one filled with more adventures than most couples, which I think can only be a good thing.
I do judge it as a good thing. And let me ask you, has anything popped into your head while I've been talking for most of this episode that you wish you'd mentioned in the prior episode? Or is there anything that you'd like to comment on regarding your experience with Christine? Because I can see how in talking about all of this that you might have thought of something that you missed or that you wanted to put in, but you didn't want to interrupt.
Well, I was thinking of debuting a new section of the show with this week's episode, follow-up, to clarify and extend the remarks of previous episodes. And
sounds like someone got in trouble.
No, actually, I'd said Christine hadn't gotten to listen to the live stream of the last episode because the live stream was having issues. So I had made a really quick and dirty edit of the show for her to listen to as she drove to and from work. She works about 40 minutes away from our house, so a round trip is about the length of an episode. And so she actually listened to the episode very shortly after we recorded it. Mm-hmm. And said that I got pretty much everything right. There was really only two points that I needed to come back and clarify, both related to when we were in the car when I first asked her out. And I had said in the last episode that I had gradually worn her down in the car and convinced her to go out and date me. And she reminded me that that was not quite correct. It was not my eloquence and persuasiveness that won her over. It was, in fact, the still small voice of God, which she had been hearing and trying to ignore for, I guess, a couple of months prior, and then became impossible to ignore once I sprang the question on her. But I had mentioned she didn't want to date me because I had red hair, and her red-haired brother had been a trial in her life, and so she did not want to date a red-haired individual.
Sure.
And so as she's sitting in the car, the thought that God had been bringing into her mind for a couple of months now came back into her mind, namely what God had said to Samuel as Samuel was going to pick a new king of Israel and had gone to the sons of Jesse and had been forced to pass over all of the older, stronger, handsomer sons of Jesse until he finally got to the runt of the litter, David. And Samuel said, well, dear God, this cannot be right. And God said, Samuel, man looks on the outward appearance, but I look on the heart. This is the one. And that was what was going through Christine's mind over and over and over again as I popped the question that she finally decided, well, if God looks on the heart and not the outward appearance, how can I do otherwise? The other thing that did help was she had said, I don't want to start a relationship because I don't want to risk hurting you. And apparently I'd forgotten this, but apparently I had said, well, I don't want you to be worried about hurting me. I can take it. I'm willing to take that risk. I'm more worried about hurting you and doing something in the relationship that would cause you pain. And I'm going to be working really hard to not hurt you. So don't worry about my feelings. This is something I want to do. And apparently that helped as well.
I can understand why that would help. That seems like a illustration or a window into your intentions and your character. And so I can see how that would have allayed her concerns.
Yeah. So that was my follow-up from the last episode. Otherwise, it appears I got most of the details right and even remembered a few that she hadn't. So I'm counting that as a win.
Well done. Way to pass the test, Joe. I'm not sure how well I did. I guess I'm going to learn. Oh, wait. I have a few messages here from my wife who was listening in. She was on TV. But otherwise, well, there's nothing else here. All right. Joe, digital high five, man. We're great.
Yes, digital high five, near real-time follow-up. You got it right.
We're great husbands, aren't we? Man, those girls are
we're
lucky.
Just absolutely killing it.
All right.
And now we should probably actually go rejoin them if we want to retain our status as good husbands.
You got it. All right, Joe. Well, as always, it's been a delight. I will see you in 2 weeks' time for our next conversation about our careers.
And I am looking forward to that one as well. Talk to you soon.
Ciao, Joe.
If you liked the show, help new listeners find it by listening to Reacquainted and rating it in Apple Podcasts. Go into Apple Podcasts, subscribe to Reacquainted, and give it a rating. You can also see announcements for new shows, episodes, and upcoming live streams by following at FromVoxDuo on Twitter. That's at FromVoxDuo. Adam is on Twitter. His handle is at Adam Volle. That's Adam Volle. Joe blogs at minorthoughts.com, and he's on Twitter as well, at JMartinDF.
It strikes me, you know, everyone was warning you about the period you would face with the end of romanticism, the end of all of the illusions, and everything comes crashing in. And you said you didn't really go through that as a couple. And it makes me wonder if your situation being stuck in an illegal immigrant, really dodgy teaching job in a foreign country helped to get you past that stage without the normal going south period. In that, when you're in the U.S. and you're living in comfortable surroundings where you're each very, very familiar, and it's the two of you that are unfamiliar, I can see where it would be very easy to grow apart and to start feeling those differences and the romantic period just ending with a crash. But when you're in a foreign country where it's everything around you that is different, and the two of you are the only two things that are familiar in your world, maybe that pushes you together closer than you otherwise would be.
That's a fair point, maybe so. It's certainly true in general of expats in a foreign country, I can tell you that. When you arrive, especially if you're part of a government program and you're one of maybe 20 new teachers they've hired that year, everyone, you know, there are no cliques. Everyone wants to be friends. and you bind pretty tightly. We had a really good community in South Korea once we were firmly established. And I don't mean to say that there weren't a few early growing pains as Anna and I got to know each other. I remember one or two occasions that pop into my head where we had to clarify our thoughts on various matters. But no, that era is not remotely defined to me by growing pains. We work together as a team, and I think you share this. I think we had healthy expectations going in, despite being romantics. I think, quite happily, there was one lie of Hollywood that we were never fooled by, and that was the idea that once you were married, that's it, it's happily ever after. Also, our Christian subculture is partly to thank for that. There's a healthy attitude in any traditional society, actually, that marriage isn't just about love. It's a sort of partnership, an alliance, if you will. And that keeps you from putting too much pressure on the other person to make you happy. Wouldn't you say?
I would say so. There's definitely, we experienced it, and it sounds like you did as well, the expectation that you're there to help each other out, not to have the other person help you out. That there's the responsibility of focusing on the other person. And I don't know if you got it as much, but we certainly got a healthy dose of you're going into the marriage to marry someone who is very imperfect and you are very imperfect. So go in expecting there to be clashes where you're each going to be in the wrong, perhaps on alternate occasions, perhaps simultaneously, but don't expect it to be an easy ride, which, you know, sounds like it might be scaring people off, but it really was refreshing to know that difficulty was expected rather than a sign that you were doing something wrong.
Exactly. And even then, I don't think I had, I mean, I wanted true love. I think as growing up, if you've really bought into the faith, then since you can't really fantasize about being a playa, you just have to dream of true love. And so I grew up wanting to find a woman to love.
There were five kisses in all the history of the world that was rated as the most pure, the most perfect. This one surpassed them all.
Yeah, they don't go into it in the movie, but actually Anna and I rank on there. Anyway, but even then, I didn't believe that love was the primary purpose of marriage, I guess. I'm pragmatic about it enough to believe that there's no problem with the concept of a mail order bride, honestly. You know, 1,000 years ago, you went over to your neighbor's house and said, "Hey, is your daughter old enough yet?" And there was nothing morally wrong about that. If two people want the same thing, even if one is more interested in having children and one is more interested in economic security or similarly unromantic notions, then I think that's a perfectly valid basis for a marriage.
Yeah, it's really the basis of looking at a marriage as a partnership versus looking at it as the fulfillment of all of your romantic dreams and expectations. And if you're looking at it as just a partnership, then really there's so many different paths to find a partner. And I agree, mail order bride is just one of them. And there's certainly nothing to say that if you're both going into it clear-headed with certain goals, that you can't fall in love with each other because you're both going in wanting the same thing.
Exactly. And what do they tell you? It's all about communication.
Exactly.